It's the Ross Tucker Football Podcast.
Yeah, it is. But it's not just any Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Monster Monday, where there's always a lot to discuss, presented by SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app today. Enter promo code Tucker to get $20 off the already lowest ticket prices. I've got more concerts I'm going to this summer, and SeatGeek is my friend. The best part about it, by the way, is just that you'll get emails if they got a really especially good deal where you live. That's as valuable as anything. Spread the word, winner, and sponsor confirmation email winner. I think you guys know what they are, but just retweet the shows. All right, just retweet them, and I'll send you something. It's really that simple. Because I pick a winner every week, so you'll eventually win. At Ross Tucker NFL, at RTF Podcast, or a like on Facebook is very valuable for us. Facebook.com/RossTuckerNFL. And then we got the sponsor confirmation email winner. You guys know the deal there. You take advantage of any of our awesome sponsors like SeatGeek or a new one that we have today that I'm beyond fired up about. And boom. I will read and respond to your question on the show. That's a promise. And then you might win a little something, something also. We've got the signed pictures. We've got the signed press passes, signed football cards. I like it. I like giving stuff to you guys. I also like, by the way, giving shout outs, right? So I want to give shout outs to a couple different guys. Number one, Cliff Webb. Cliff is a listener, and he's the guy that got me in touch with Marshall Ferguson to talk about Johnny Manziel and the CFL stuff. Remember the fan ran on the field and Johnny Manziel? So I should have mentioned, I couldn't remember his name, but Cliff Webb, he emailed me and said, "Hey, my name's Cliff Webb. You forgot to mention my name." You're right, Cliff. I wanted to. I just forgot about it. And I also want to mention Josh Hess. He's a listener from down in New Orleans that turned me on to the Children of Central City. It's kind of a remarkable story about football and the impact it's had on a rough, rough area down in New Orleans. My recommendation there is to just Google Children of Central City so you can learn a little bit more about that. It's pretty special and something that we wanted to give a shout-out to. So shout-out to Cliff Webb, shout-out to Josh Hess and the Children of Central City. Also a shout-out to us for today's guest. I am pumped. So I got a chance to work with Charlie Weiss, former Notre Dame head coach, longtime coordinator in the league, four-time Super Bowl champ, I guess. I get a chance to talk to him on the radio. He's got a lot of good insight, And I just wanted to talk to him. I felt like he's the perfect guy to talk about being a coordinator versus being a head coach, college football versus the NFL. So Charlie Weiss. I think you guys are going to enjoy this. He's today's big show.
The big show.
Really excited about today's guest because this is a guy I've gotten a chance to know quite a bit over the last couple months. We do a show most Fridays on Sirius XM NFL Radio. He's a three-time Super Bowl championship offensive coordinator. He has four rings total, right, Coach?
That's correct.
Four Super Bowl rings, and obviously was also the head coach at Notre Dame. I guess I'll start there, Coach. So do you prefer these days, now that you're retired, do you prefer to watch college football or the NFL?
Well, I watch football all day Saturday and all day Sunday, but I really don't enjoy the game unless I have a rooting interest. And the only real rooting interest I have is watching my kid. You know, my kid coaches. So wherever he is, that's my rooting interest. Other than that, when I'm watching the games, I find myself way too analytical when I'm watching the game. So instead of enjoying yourself, you're saying, well, why are they doing this? Or why are they doing that? Rather than just watch the game for fun.
So are you literally there, Coach, like sitting on the couch yelling at the TV? Because if that's true, you got to get your wife or someone to videotape that. I bet you could get a lot of people streaming that like on Facebook or something if it was just a camera on you yelling at the coaches on TV.
I usually watch games by myself. You know, so I'll sit in my office and watch a game, or, you know, I might be in our TV room, watch a game with my wife's down riding her horses. I'll sit there and watch a game. But I very seldom do I watch a game with anybody else.
So do you have any examples of things that you remember from last year or any time really that really frustrated you?
Yeah, I'll give you two examples. One was my kid was coaching for the Falcons, and they're playing against the Cowboys. And the Cowboys lose their starting left tackle. And they put in a substitute left tackle who proceeds to give up six sacks to the same guy, you know, over and over and over in the game. And I'm saying to myself, will you give him some help? Will you get somebody over there to help this left tackle and not hang him out to dry? And, you know, I just watched it over and over and over, and I said, oh, my God. I was just screaming at the TV. And in another game, I'm watching I'm actually doing the game for, you know, NBC Sports Boston, and I'm watching the Patriots play against the Steelers in Pittsburgh. And in the second half, Tommy is throwing the ball to Gronkowski on every play. And on every play, he's open. And I find myself, even though I was rooting for the Patriots, I find myself saying, will you double number 87? Will you give some kind of special attention to 87? Or are you just going to let him beat you single-handedly? So I'm screaming at him, saying, double 87. It's not a novel concept.
Coach, that makes me feel a lot better because I was watching both those games as it happened and was thinking the exact same thing. And sometimes as a player, you think, well, maybe there's some like aspect of this that I don't quite understand and that coaches know more than I do. But especially the O-line one. There was nothing on the O-line one. But the Gronkowski thing, I thought, okay, maybe there's something I just don't get in terms of coverage. But to hear you say that makes me feel good. Speaking of that, Coach, you know, you were a head coach and assistant in college. You were never a head coach in the NFL. But just in general, which one did you prefer? Which one do you like, if you had to come back for 3 years and coach, would you rather coach in college or the NFL?
Wouldn't make a difference. Well, I'd rather coach in the NFL, and I'd rather be a coordinator than a head coach. The only difference is the head coach makes more money. Okay. But the head coach has all the headaches that come with running an organization. See, it's turned into where head coaches now are like CEOs of companies. So it isn't just the football that you deal with. You deal with everything. Okay, you deal with owners. You deal with management. You deal with the scouting department, personnel department. You deal with operations. You deal with field. You deal with all the money people, you deal with all them. I mean, you deal with all the problems that come up with the players, the players themselves, and then players' families. And that's even before you're dealing with the problems with your own family. Okay. As a coordinator, you really run half the team, and all you do is coach. All you do is coach football. And if there's a major problem with any of your players, you send them down to the head coach. You know, the head coach takes care of it. Now, granted, assistants and coordinators do all they can to solve the problems they set themselves. But when they can't solve it anymore, instead of having to be the final answer, you have to pass it on to the head coach. So if I went back, you know, if I went back into coaching, I'd either coordinate or I'd be like an assistant head coach of offense where I could kind of be a liaison between a younger coordinator that I could help, and a head coach.
What's the biggest difference between – so you kind of gave me the difference between coordinator and head coach, and I've had a lot of guys say that to me, is that they work their whole life to be a head coach, and then it's the least amount of football that they've done in 20 years because it's all the other stuff. What about the biggest difference, Coach, between coaching in the NFL and college football?
Well, there's two big differences. One is the time. Well, the first is the maturity level. you know, in college, you're dealing with 18 to 22, 23-year-old kids. You know, they come in kids, they leave young, as young men, but, your livelihood is being, you know, is counting on 18-year-olds doing the right thing. And, you know, that's a little different than in the pros, because in the pros now, if they screw up, you get rid of them. You know, in college, you know, you're on scholarship. You don't, you know, they screw up. You know, it isn't like you can the whole team. You only can so many of them. You know, and usually the easiest time to do is when you first walk in the door. Get rid of them then, so you don't have to don't have nearly the same problems as you move forward. Now, the other thing is the time that you get to work with the players. You know, now I know with the collective bargaining agreement, the time's a little bit more restricted now. But in reality, okay, you know, you get players from 7 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock at night when you're in the NFL. And college kids are in class, so you don't even get to see them till 2:30 in the afternoon. So you get them at 2:30 in the afternoon, by 7 o'clock, they're off to go eat dinner and go to study hall and do homework and stuff like that.
And how much of a difference does that make in the on-field product? I had a guy, actually a coach of mine, he was on the College Draft podcast recently, Frank Verducci, who coached for you at Notre Dame and in Florida. Frank coached me in Dallas and Buffalo. And I think he said something to me one time, like, where in the NFL, I mean, if you have one or two mental errors on the O-line as an entire unit, I mean, you're upset. Whereas in college, he said it's more like 8 to 10. You think that's fair to say, Coach, that there's just going to be more mental errors in college? A, they're younger. B, they're not as experienced. And C, you know, you just don't have as much time to work with them and meet with them and stuff.
Oh, I think that that's totally true. I think that, you know, what our goal in an NFL game was to have single digits in mental errors for the entire group, for the whole offense. We would want to have our goal was to have single digits of mental errors. I mean, in college, remember the total week you get with them is 20 hours, and the game counts as 3 of those hours. So that leaves you with 17 hours the whole week. Usually it's 4 days of 4 hours, and that's meeting and practice. It's 4 days of 4 hours, and then, you know, one day of 1 hour, and there's your 17 hours.
Wow. It must have been, I mean, I'm just knowing you a little bit, Coach, and what you said about, you know, when you watch games, how frustrating was it for you to go from the Patriots, where you win Super Bowls 3 out of 4 years, and you're going to a smart group of kids at Notre Dame, but it had to be tough. I mean, what were you in the pros for, like 15 years or something? And then you go to college and have that drop off and the increase in mental errors. I feel like, and I'm not even a coach, but I feel like that would drive me crazy when you're having guys on your team having mental errors, because you feel like it's a reflection of you.
Well, you had to tweak it, you know. So in training camp, you know, when school hasn't started yet, you'd have these guys from early in the morning till late at night. So you'd have them from, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning till 9:30 at night. So what you did is you put in the bulk of all the stuff you do during training camp. And then each week you would pick, you know, just game plan specific things that you were going to work on, or they already had a foundation of it and they just had to go back to, well, hey, we did this in training camp, we're doing it this week. You know, there'd be some things that you would do every week, but, you know, most of the things you did, you know, there were never too many things that were just completely brand new.
What, let's get to Tom Brady a little bit, Coach. Obviously, he flourished under your tutelage and won those 3 Super Bowls. When was the first inkling you had, Coach, that, wow, you know, we got this guy in the 6th round. I think we got something here.
Well, I mean, there were signs of it before he was playing. You know, there were signs of it. But even you know, after his first year, when he only played like three, he threw three balls, I think, his whole first year. He was 1 for 3 for like 6 yards. You know, the next year, going into camp, Bledsoe was the starter, and him and Damon Eward were competing for the backup. And really, he didn't, like, beat him out in training camp. It was just too close to call. So Bill and I sat down, and we went back and forth, and we decided to go with, well, if something happens to Bledsoe, who's going to go in second? And we just decided on him, because the second guy, what few reps are left over from the first guy in the NFL, the second guy gets. So we decided on Tommy. But it wasn't until about the middle of the year, we're playing a game. It was either San Diego or New Orleans. It was one of those two teams. But I think it was San Diego. But anyway, we were down by 11 in the fourth quarter, and he threw a touchdown pass and a two-point conversion to cut it to 3. Then we got the ball back and went down and kicked a field goal to send it into overtime. Now, in overtime, they got the ball first. They went 3 and out. Okay, they punted us. Now, on our first offensive play, they ran an exotic blitz that we had seen on tape, and we had practiced versus this exotic blitz. We were going to audible. Now, audible is different than a check with me. Audible would be, this play is not in the mix right now, but we're changing the entire play. It's not like this play or that play. It's an entirely new play based off of this look. So they had not run the exotic blitz the entire game. And first play of overtime that we have the ball, they line up, and there, sure enough, here it comes. And he saw it. And we ended up getting a 55-yard gain on the play. And after that game was over, that play right there was the one that stuck out in my mind, saying, how does a first-year – it was his second year in the league – but how does a first-year guy go an entire game, not see the exotic blitz one time, and on his first rep in overtime, he's astute enough to realize, you know, he's astute enough to realize, hey, this is what we got here.
How difficult was it, the decision to keep him in there when Bledsoe was healthy again?
Not very difficult. You know, hey, I felt bad for Drew because Drew lost the game because he got injured, not because he had played bad. But, you know, we were on a roll. And when you're on a roll, you know, coaches and teams are very superstitious. And if you won a bunch of games in a row, I mean, change is not something you really want to be doing.
That makes sense. What about I know you've told me this story, Coach, but I want you to share it with my listeners here on the podcast about Brady as a person and the example that you've given me once or twice about when you were sick.
All right. So I go in for a surgery that the only people that knew I was getting a surgery done was my wife, Belichick, and Tommy. Okay, they're the only three people who know. So I was getting it done on a Friday, which, by the way, never get major surgery on a Friday, just to give you a heads up. Get it on a Monday. Don't get it on a Friday.
Why not on a Friday?
The doctors go away for the weekend, and you get the substitute doctors that really don't want to operate on you if something goes wrong. Okay, so now I've given you that answer. So I went in for the surgery, which was supposed to be you're in one day and out the next day. So I had the surgery done, and my wife left that evening to go home. And then during the night, my blood pressure dropped to 50 over 30, and I was in intensive care, practically dead. So he comes in the next morning just to come visit me, because he didn't want to listen to me give him a bunch of noise about not stopping in to see me while I'm in the hospital. And when he walks in, I'm in intensive care, and I'm just about dead. And we were from New Jersey. We're living up in New England. And, you know, we didn't have, like, any close friends or family up in New England. So the cavalry, you know, my wife was in shock because she had left me. Everything was fine. So he stayed with her basically for those 48 hours when the troops were coming up from New Jersey you know, he basically stayed with her the whole time to, you know, help her keep it together, because she if he wasn't there, she would have lost it.
Wow. That's crazy. I remember hearing, the surgery, and I remember hearing something about that. I didn't realize, A, it was that serious for you, and B, that he stayed.
I was dead twice. I mean, flatlined twice, you know. So, I mean, and I'm sure there's some people who wish it would have stayed that way. But, you know, unfortunately for them, I actually ended up making it, you know. But that moment will always, you know, the Weisses will always have a special bond and a special place in their heart with Tommy, and that had nothing to do with football.
So that's an amazing story, and I know you've told me that off the air once on the radio, which is amazing. I think he's the best quarterback there's ever been, Coach. I feel honored that I was even able to snap it to him and practice and be a part of the team for parts of 2 years. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but I just can't believe. I mean, he's older than I am, and I played 7 years and retired 10 years ago, and he's still the MVP of the league. I mean, even when you knew that first year, Coach, that you had something, and even when you won those Super Bowls, I don't know that people still thought he would end up being this. Like, did you think he'd end up being this?
I told my wife first year, okay, and may God strike me dead if I did not say this to her. I said, I think this guy has a chance to be one of the best of all time. And it's really turned out, it was kind of prophetic. My wife talks about it all the time. She goes, she said it to her. He told it to me the first year. And it just played out that way. There was something different about him. Don't tell me what it is, but whatever it is, he's got it.
You're exactly right. That I can verify. Well, Coach, I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much. I really enjoy getting a chance to work with you on the radio. I'm glad you got a chance to come on the podcast as well.
All right. Take care. Have a good day.
That Tom Brady story, wow, Bri. I mean, that's one of those, when I tweet out the show, I'm going to even say, if you love Brady, you'll love him more. If you hate Brady, this is going to make it a little bit tougher.
Or if you hate Brady, you can't hate him anymore.
Yeah.
You just can't.
How do you hate it? 48 hours he sat there with Charlie Weiss's wife? I mean, that's pretty incredible. He flatlined twice? Wow, man. That's scary, really scary, and really awesome of Brady. I don't really understand people that hate Brady. I mean, I guess sometimes people don't like people that are like too perfect or too. I don't see where all the hate comes from for Brady. Do you?
I think it's jealousy. Like I said, he's perfect. He's got the perfect wife. He looks like he's got the perfect family. He's got the perfect job. He's good at everything. Good, not good. Great at everything he does. Yeah. I get why some people would say that, but you know what? For those people, they've got their own issues.
Yes, that's a good point. And you know what? It was when I was there and I saw that he was also the best chugger I had ever seen. I wouldn't say I hated him, but I was like, you got to be freaking kidding me.
Like, what can't this guy do?
Yeah, I was like, does this guy have every positive male quality known? I mean, he's really good looking. He's an awesome guy. Like, he's a legit awesome, unselfish guy. Works his butt off. I mean, he sprinted that night to pay the tab at the barbecue joint. It's just like, and then he killed all the rookie O-linemen in a chugging contest. Guy's pretty special, and he's ridiculously fashionable, which tells me he probably gets his jeans from Mott and Bo. New sponsor alert, and we are pumped. Now, Bri, this is really rare, okay? I have friends that are more fashionable than me that get their jeans from Mott and Bo and said, we love them. You should get your jeans there, and you should try to get them as an advertiser. So I literally sent out a email to Alejandro, who is the founder of Mott and Bo, and said, look, I really want to advertise your jeans, because my buddies tell me that they're awesome. A, I want some of the jeans, and B, I think it's we don't have any jean advertiser, and jeans are awesome. Everybody wears them all the time. And he was like, yeah, we'll give it a shot. So here's the deal, right? These are handcrafted jeans for less than half the price that those crazy expensive jeans are at the store, right? So, you know, people wear these like jeans that cost over $200, which is ridiculous. You can get jeans that are that quality for less than half the price. My shipment is on the way. I haven't gotten them yet. Hopefully I'll get them before I tell you about it on either the college draft tomorrow or Fantasy Feast and Even Money on Wednesday. But they are awesome, according to all my friends that wear them. Their whole deal is they want to have jeans that look and feel really expensive, but they're not, because you don't have to get them in a store. You're not paying for a brand name. You're not paying for retail price. You are going direct to mottandbow.com. MOTTANDBOW.com. If you enter the promo code Tucker, you get 15% off your purchase. 15% off your first purchase, but that expires July 31st. So it's really this month only. So take advantage of it. And by the way, I'm just telling you right now, the first couple people that take advantage of this deal and send me a code, send me the sponsor email, I'm giving you the field pass to the NFFC. So you want to go to the NFC this weekend, National Fantasy Football Convention? Go ahead, take advantage of the Mott and Bow deal. Boom. And by the way, Mott and Bow is also going to be a big deal for those of you that want to get in the Fantasy Football League with Evan and I as well for July. So either way, whatever you want to do, Mott and Bow is where it's at. MOTTANDBOW.com. Use that promo code Tucker.
Tuck's Takes. All right, Ross, let's start today with the news. The Arizona Cardinals general manager Steve Keim getting cited for a DUI on July 4th.
What a shame. What a shame on multiple levels. So in interest of full disclosure, I like Steve. He is from central Pennsylvania, like the Harrisburg area. I've talked to him several times. You know, he's a former offensive lineman that went to NC State. Really like him as a guy, and I think he's done a lot of good things in Arizona. Although, obviously, that roster has deteriorated a little bit. They are going to be down this year, and we'll see how much patience Michael Bidwell, the owner, has as they kind of try to revamp that thing. New quarterback, you know, they're kind of moving on from the era of Arians and Carson Palmer. And we'll see if Keim can get them through that. But this doesn't help. I mean, if you're about to go through a tough time, this absolutely does not help if you are Steve Keim. I mean, to put your organization in a situation like this, it's not good. And I don't think he's on the hot seat, but this won't help his situation. He will be suspended for a couple games, I would imagine, because they try to hold executives to an even higher standard than the players themselves.
Tuck's Takes. Also, some disappointing news out of Cleveland, where the Browns put lineman Donald Stevenson on the reserved/retired list.
Just a weird story, Bri, because, you know, the new GM in Cleveland obviously has a lot of familiarity with Stevenson from their time together in Kansas City. Right. So they know each other well. He gets the job in Cleveland. He knows that Joe Thomas might retire. So he goes ahead and he signs Stevenson to be kind of a backup option at left tackle as the starter, meaning, you know, he's like a serviceable guy and you know he can get the job done if you need him to. But you're probably hoping somebody else actually wins the starting job. But they gave him, you know, $2.5 million. You know, I mean, Dorsey wasn't messing around, giving him $2.5 million to be the swing tackle, maybe start. And the guy showed up for nothing. He didn't show up for anything. They said publicly they were fining him. Then it comes out he's suspended for a couple games. and under the substance abuse policy, and now they put him on the reserve retired list. I guess he signed with the Browns and then just decided he didn't want to play anymore. I don't know what the deal is there, but that's brutal, really brutal. It's not good for the Browns because it really hurts. They thought they'd at least have Stevenson as a solid swing tackle. They don't even have that.
Ducks takes.
The NFL also announced there are going to be 7 new officials this year, and they released their official rule book for the 2018 season.
I didn't get a chance to ask Coach about this. This would have been a good one because, you know, they have a book. You know, they scout the officials, right? So they have sort of a scouting report on all of the officials around the league. I wonder if they go so far as to try to get scouting reports on guys that come from the college ranks when they come. I mean, it's really more about the crew, you know, like this crew goes ahead and calls more holding penalties or more pass interference or whatever. But I don't know how deep they go with the college guys or if they just stick by crew. But I thought that was interesting, noteworthy that there's seven new guys. And they're trying to give as many examples as possible for what that third component is of the catch, right? So it's, you know, possession of the ball, 2 feet down, and then tuck and run, dive. You know, they got different. They're trying to have more and more distinct, specific examples of what constitutes a catch.
Ever wanted to ask an NFL player a question? Well, here's your chance. It's time to ask Ross.
The email address, ross@rostucker.com. It's very simple. I love your email questions. I want as many of them as possible. I love when you take advantage of the sponsors like Mott & Bow or SeatGeek or whatever. Forward me the question. I guarantee I'll read and respond to it. And you might get the NFFC pass, or you might get to play in the even money, the Fantasy Feast League against Evan and I. There's a lot of possibilities. All right, Brian, what do you got?
All right, hey, Ross, there's a photo of you online with a stack of your helmets. And at the NFL level, when a player leaves a team, do they get to take their helmet and any unworn jersey? Well, since their name is already on it, I guess they can't use it again. If so, do they ask you to pay for it, or do they let you just take it? That's from Rick in San Antonio.
And I believe Rick took advantage of the Amazon banner ad on the homepage. So thank you for that, Rick. We love those of you that just bookmarked that bad boy. So anytime you need to buy something at Amazon, boom.
Especially with Amazon Prime Day coming up next week.
Oh, there you go, Bri. Let's give Rossi T and Bri a little love. Get a little love. We get a little something-something. It's not much, trust me, but it's a little something-something. Look, if you're going to buy something anyway, you might as well go through us, and then you can ask us a question, any question you want. Good question, by the way, Rick. A lot of Cowboys fans down there in San Antonio. So I will say, so you can almost always, Rick, get it, right? So you can get your jersey or you can get your helmet if you ask for it. I think the only team that ever charged me was the Dallas Cowboys. $300 for the helmet. As for the jersey, I don't remember what that was. I don't remember any other team charging me. Because I never played in a regular season game in Cleveland, I didn't even ask for my helmet or jersey. I was just so annoyed I didn't even ask for it. I probably should have. It would have been a good thing to give away at a charity or whatever, especially if they would have just given it to me. But I was so kind of fed up and shocked and disgusted. Just so you know, by the way, those names come on and off of it. Those like names, they can easily take the name part of it off and put another name on. So it's not like they throw away the jersey. They just put, like, I was number 66 for the Browns. They cut me, traded for Hank Fraley that day. They removed the Tucker, put the Fraley on, and there you go. That simple. But usually they let you keep it. Like the Redskins gave, let me keep a bunch of stuff, which was awesome. The Bills were great about it. Patriots, I think, were fine. Patriots might have charged me too. Now that I think about it, Patriots might have charged me. I don't remember that, but they might have. But yeah, I guess it depends on the team. But yeah, they'll almost always let you have it. It's just whether or not they charge you. It's not like they're like, no, you can't have it. You can have it. It's just whether or not they charge you. Good question. We'll get to some more on Wednesday. Should be a good week for Andrew Brandt. I already have an awesome, awesome guest lined up for, I think it'll be Thursday. So either Thursday or Friday morning. So either way, we are covered this week. And then Brian and I, along with our guy Christopher Jackson, who helped build RossTucker.com, we're all going to be at the National Fantasy Football Convention this weekend, hopefully interviewing a bunch of players. So we'll have some awesome interviews for all the shows, especially RTFP and the Fantasy Feast throughout the month, which will be pretty, pretty exciting. That'll do it, though, for today for a Monster Monday edition of the RTFP. Football season's right around the corner. Please rate and review the show if you haven't. We're trying to rise up the charts of the algorithm there. If you rate and review and send me a screenshot of that, you can ask me any question as well. So that takes $0. It takes less than 2 minutes, and you can ask me any question you want. Because we need and want more people to rate and review. So really, really appreciate it. Obviously, hopefully most of you are already subscribed to it. Other than that, got an awesome guest, Dane Brugler, on the College Draft Podcast tomorrow, breaking down the supplemental draft, which is actually a thing this year. There's like legit dudes in the supplemental draft this year. You're going to want to make sure you hear what Dane has to say. There might be three guys drafted in the supplemental draft. Pretty crazy. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Fantasy Feast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcasts, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.